Welcome to the Should Have Bet More podcast presented by VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Coming up on the show, Dave Ross of VSiN will join us. We will go over the World Series, the day that was in the NFL, look ahead to Monday night. For those that don't know, Dave had a pretty big ticket on the Blue Jays. Circa Sportsbook in Las Vegas had a blackjack tournament, I think right around the All-Star break, kind of a promotional thing, and you were able to take your winnings, and they had a draft of all the World Series futures, and you could just pick from all the different teams. And Dave, I think, had the ninth pick and ended up picking the Blue Jays at the time. They were 22-1. He was able to take his winnings and turn that into a Blue Jays future ticket, and he had a lot of money on the Blue Jays to win. I know he was able to hedge, but we'll get his thoughts on the series, just what he learned from hedging and just that whole experience. Then, of course, just react to what was an incredible Game 7, just an awesome World Series. I mean, you can't have a better World Series, a better Game 7 than that. We'll talk to Dave about that. And again, the football. And football is where we'll start. I'll get some thoughts here on the World Series in a minute. By the way, 20-1 on Yamamoto got home. No, we gave out some other guys, Snell and Glasnow, but hopefully people, I know some people listened and cashed and bet along with Yamamoto. How about that performance? Just incredible what he did in Game 6 and then again in Game number 7. But we'll start with football. Sat here last week and said, man, the games were boring. The games were blowouts. This was an incredible day of football. Every game was close. Every game was exciting. Just about one-score game after one-score game. Exciting finishes. I mean, this is what NFL football is about. When you just sit there and watch these games come down to the wire and you watch the red zone or you're flipping back and forth. I mean, this is what the NFL is and this is what the NFL is supposed to be. This is a great day of football. I'll start with the Bills-Chiefs, really the marquee game, and there's a lot of prongs from this. The Bills had kind of gotten forgotten about. They beat the Ravens early in the season. Maybe this is their year. Easy schedule. They're going to be the one seed. Everyone liked them to be the one seed. Kind of gotten forgotten about, and for good reason, I guess. I mean, they had two losses in a row. They lost the Monday night to the Falcons, lost at home to the Patriots, and had been off the radar a little bit. They bounced back. They smoked Carolina, and they win a pretty convincing wire-to-wire game just about. I know the Chiefs, I think, briefly took the lead there in the second quarter, but the Bills reestablished themselves as a contender here. Not that anyone didn't think they're a contender, and they're still not a lock to win the division, even though they are minus 160 here at DraftKings, minus 175 at FanDuel. Patriots have beaten them in their building, and if you beat them, if the Patriots beat them again, that's going to be a huge swing, including when you include the tiebreaker there. So they're not a lock to win the division by any stretch, but you always, when you're Buffalo, you always, and they always beat Kansas City in the regular season and never beat them in the playoffs. It's remarkable how that goes. I think five in a row now in the regular season and never, ever beat them in the playoffs. It's just bizarre how that rivalry works and just the dynamic of that. But you want to beat Kansas City because you want that game in your building. And I know Kansas City has gone in there and beaten them, in the playoffs. They did it a couple years ago, but still, all things being equal, you don't want to go into Arrowhead. You want that game in your building, and this gives that a better chance of happening. But, the Bills could be a wild card, and the Chiefs, which I think is an interesting takeaway, could be a wild card because you look at it, and they looked like the best team in the league for the past few weeks. They got Rice back, the defense is good, and they might still be the best team, and they might still be the Super Bowl champion. I mean, if you had to pick an AFC representative, if you had to pick a Super Bowl champion right now, I mean, I think a lot of people would still pick the Chiefs just because it's the Chiefs and Mahomes. That being said, they're now 5-4. They have a bye. And Denver is quietly 7-2. Probably wouldn't have won the game today if Stroud didn't get hurt for the Texans, but he did. And now the Broncos have strung together 6 in a row, a 7-2 record. And now the Broncos turn around and play the Raiders on Thursday night at home in Denver. And if you're Denver, if you can win that one, that puts you at 8-2 with the Chiefs at 5-4. And the next game for the Chiefs after a bye, Sunday, November 16th at Denver. And, you can never count the Chiefs out in terms of the division or anything. But if, let's just fast forward and let's just do a little projecting. Broncos beat the Raiders, they're 8-2. Chiefs are a bye, they're still 5-4. If the Broncos can win that game at home at Mile High, that puts them at 9-2 and the Chiefs at 5-5. Now, they will play again in Kansas City on Christmas, and the Chiefs' schedule is not that difficult going forward, but you get the idea. And just to give you an idea of the Chiefs' schedule, after that, they do play the Colts. That game is in Kansas City, November 23rd. The Cowboys in Dallas on Thanksgiving, home against the Texans, home against the Chargers, at the Titans, home against the Broncos on Christmas, as I mentioned. Then he finished the season at Vegas. That's not a hard schedule, but it's also not an easy schedule. And look, 9-2 to 5-5, if that is the scenario here, it's going to be very hard to overcome. So that's going to be an enormous game there for the division. If you look at the division odds right now, the Broncos in the AFC West are minus 140. The Chiefs are minus 120. I'm sorry, the Broncos are plus 150. The Chiefs are plus 120. The Chargers are plus 370. Broncos at plus 150 looks pretty good. And now do you trust the Broncos to beat the Chiefs even at home? That's the question. Chiefs off of a bye. We know all the, you know, the stats with Andy Reid off of a bye. But you can make the case you're basically getting the Broncos plus 150 at a home game, because if they're able to beat the Raiders and then win that game and create that gap that I talked about, 9-2 to 5-5, it's going to be very hard to overcome. I like the Broncos plus 150 to win that division. I think that's a good bet. Colts finally came back down to earth a little bit. Got up early against the Steelers. I know some turnovers, some sort of fluke plays, just typical Steeler magic. So a huge win for the Steelers, because with the Ravens catching some steam and starting to get healthier and their schedule the way it is, and the Steelers going the wrong way with losing a couple games in a row, that was one they desperately needed to stop the bleeding. The Ravens now minus 130 division favorites. Steelers plus 140. Bengals 12-1. Browns 55-1. Would not bet either of those. Mentioned giving out the Steelers, you know, plus 250 at certain prices, and then coming back with the Ravens at a short odds-on number. So, you know, you're in good shape if you did either one of those. I still think the Ravens probably win the division, but that was a huge win for the Steelers to stem the tide there. Bills minus 175 favorites. Patriots plus 140 to win the division. Obviously, the Dolphins and the Jets are dead. That division is going to be fascinating. So those are the two things I think are the most interesting. Those division races, as we turn the calendar to November, last couple months plus of the regular season, about halfway point, the midway point, the AFC West and the AFC East are going to be absolutely fascinating to watch here going forward. The other division that I think is going to be really interesting and kind of tightened up today, the Packers and Lions both lose as huge favorite. Boy, if you had that parlay on the money line, Minnesota and Carolina, Minnesota like 9.5-point dog and Carolina 13-point dog, and both of them win outright. And Minnesota might have a quarterback. It was funny. Everyone quick to write off McCarthy. I'm not pretty guilty of it too, but I thought, you know, the kid never plays. They got rid of Darnold, got rid of Jones. McCarthy, you know, doesn't look any good. He only played two games. One of them wasn't good, but he hurt his ankle. The other one against the Bears that Monday night, he was bad for most of it, played great in the fourth quarter. Maybe they have a quarterback. Now, he's in a great spot with all those receivers, weapons. That's a good team to be around. But McCarthy, I thought, was impressive today. And that was a tough loss for the Lions, a brutal loss for the Packers. Packers are a hard team to figure out. They look like the best team in the league the first couple weeks of the season. Destroyed Detroit. Impressive on that Thursday night against Washington. Kind of up and down since, but it looked like, you know, 5-1-1, back on track. That was a horrible loss for them. And Carolina's quietly 5-4 here. Carolina's actually played better than you might think. The other division, as we're recording this, Sunday Night Football is taking place. Rams win. That Saints quarterback was just awful. That's an awful team to watch. And the 49ers win. That looks like it might be an interesting three-team race with the Rams, the Seahawks, and the 49ers. So, fun day. Really fun day of football. But I think my big takeaway is the Broncos, if they can just win a couple home games in a row here coming up, you might make it a situation where the Chiefs just can't catch you. And the Broncos will be a 10-point favorite at home Thursday night against the Raiders, and then turn around, get a 10-day break, turn around and play what is a huge game at home against the Chiefs to try to get a lot of separation. 9-2 to 5-5 is a massive difference. Some of the games next week, Falcons and Colts in Germany. And I mentioned Colts, you know, kind of due for one of these. Doesn't change how I view them too much. Still don't think they're like a Super Bowl team. I've been saying second round, I could see them at this point maybe making an AFC title game. They've raised my expectations to that, but still, like, making the Super Bowl, holding up the trophy at the end seems like a lot. But they'll be 6.5-point favorites against the Falcons. That's an okay game. Patriots Bucks is a fun one. Bills Dolphins shouldn't be great. Vikings Ravens now, that's in Minnesota, doesn't look as easy as it did yesterday with McCarthy playing well. So that'll be a fun one. Ravens laying 3. Jags Texans. Texans season's basically over on life support. That was a brutal loss. A game I thought they were playing pretty well. Stroud looked pretty good the last couple weeks. Then he gets the concussion. The Jags were able to hold on and beat the Raiders in another really exciting game on Sunday. Boy, Bowers is incredible. What a player he is. My goodness, he is good. The Raiders tight end. Seahawks and Cardinals. Seahawks laying 6.5. Lions laying 3 in Washington. Rams laying 3 and 49 against the 49ers. Chargers laying 3.5 against the Steelers. Monday night is Packers laying 2.5 against the Eagles. That is next week. These are great games next week. So a fun game, a fun week of games coming up here. How about the Panthers being 5.5 point favorites over anyone? They're 5.5 point favorites over the Saints. We do have a Monday night game here. Cowboys Cardinals. I'll keep it quick. I'll keep it simple. I like the over. Hard to make these overs high enough. Hard to make these overs high enough when it comes to the Cowboys. When you look at their game, 66 points, 68 points. I mean, all of their games are in the 50s, 60s plus. It's just impossible to, not impossible to stay under here, but very hard to bet under when they're this good on offense and they're this bad on defense and they're awful on defense and really good on offense. Now, Brissett is more of a kind of a game manager, check it down guy. So I don't love that. The Cardinals quarterback going with the backup again here for Dallas, but with the way these games have gone, pretty much just blindly bet the overs and do pretty well here with Dallas. So I'll go over 53.5. So we'll get to Dave Ross's thoughts on the NFL and baseball. And as I mentioned, what a game, what a series. Very rarely do I sit there and watch a sporting event and just laugh. And I was just laughing because Rojas hits the homer. The Rojas play the next inning defensively. The fly ball that was caught by Páez where he jumps over his lone left fielder with the World Series Game 7 on the line, basically like Randy Moss going up and catching a football. It's just, it was so ridiculous in terms of the drama, the excitement, the, I just couldn't believe what I was watching. That's how great that game was. I mean, absolutely incredible baseball. The drama was fantastic. Just the fact that you get Game 7 of the World Series is so good, so dramatic in and of itself. I haven't had it since 2019, and you know, coincidentally, Scherzer started both games. 2019, he was the pitcher for the Nationals, and then to do it again here in 2025 for the Blue Jays. Wow, just such an incredible series, an incredible game, all timer. I mean, I sit here and trying to think of a more excruciating loss for any team, for any fan base, than what Toronto just suffered. 86 Red Sox, 2011, the Rangers were a strike away, I think, 18 different times in Game 6. And then had a lead again in extra innings after that game was tied, and then led again in Game 7 and lost that, as the Red Sox did. Had a lead in Game 7 in that 86 series. Just incredible. Just an unbelievable baseball game. Hopefully people tailed on the Yamamoto 20-1. Another guy, by the way, talk about this all the time. Yankees didn't want to pay for it. They got outbid for, and I think the lesson here for a lot of these teams, you spend big to win big. The Dodgers, not a perfect team. Bullpen issues, also plenty of issues. They weren't great in the regular season. But when you spend that big, you give yourself a margin for error, and that team is just stacked. They're loaded. And in a sport with no salary cap, spending the most money helps. So these other teams like the Yankees that don't go above and beyond, that's the difference between winning it all and not. And think about it, just a ridiculous embarrassment of riches. And Rojas is the guy to tie the game. In the ninth, just an incredible moment, an incredible World Series. Kiner Falefa really cost him the World Series by not getting a better lead. I know that's harsh, but he gets a better secondary lead. They're still partying. They're still pouring champagne on each other as we speak. They should have won that game. They should have won the series. And I talk about it with all these sports. Said it when the Mariners lost to the Blue Jays. Just the thought of getting back and everything you have to go through to get back. Take a couple months off. Valentine's Day is pitchers and catchers, 6 weeks of spring training and practice and things like that. A six-month grind, 162 regular season just to get back to the playoffs, and then you're going to go through three or four rounds just to get back to where you just were. It's crushing, absolutely crushing. And the Dodgers, just an incredible comeback and such an exciting game, such a great sporting event, that World Series. Yamamoto, 20-1. MVP gets home, and he was warming up. I tweeted this out. He's plus 350 when he was warming up the other night, and he's thinking, Ohtani hasn't done much. If he comes in, if the Dodgers win, and he comes in and wins games two, win game six, game two, a complete game, and then does anything in game seven, which when you're warming up, you're going to go in there. With him going up in, that was a good one too, and he's able to just not only come in and get a batter, get an inning on 0 days rest, to get out of jams and to just get them home with multiple innings. An absolutely all-time legendary performance from Yamamoto. I mean, that's as good as it gets. I mean, that is baseball lore. Randy Johnson did it in game seven of 2001 on 0 days rest. I mean, that is just stuff you never forget. That is going to be baseball history. That is going to be an all-time legendary performance. You're going to see that, hear about that, read about that forever. That's how good it was. That's how good that game was. That's how good that series was. Just lucky to watch it, really. Just lucky to watch it, lucky to enjoy it. So much fun. You can't ask for a better World Series. And the Blue Jays, who did dance, a lot of their fans did dance on the Yankees fans' grave when they eliminated the Yankees. They are now eliminated themselves. And the Blue Jays, just a devastating loss. Absolutely incredible to witness that. And everything that that series brought, the 18-inning game in Game 3. The Blue Jays to go home up 3-2 when the Dodgers get 6 in Toronto. That Game 6 ending was incredible as well. And then Game 7, all-timer, just an all-time series. So our buddy Dave Ross will be on next. Like I said, he had quite a ticket on the Blue Jays to win the whole thing. So we'll see how he is holding up. I know he hedged, so he did make some money on it, but still a tough one to stomach for Dave. We'll get his thoughts on football, the Monday night game. That is next. This is Shoulda Bet More podcast. Before we get to Dave, I've been saying at the end, I'll try to mix it up here and say in the beginning, rate, review, subscribe. Still stuck on the same number of views from a week or two ago. We'll do another contest here coming up maybe in the next week or so, but rate, review, subscribe. Coming up, Dave Ross. All right, the man of the hour, the man of the day. Nice enough to join us on what is a tough day, but he's always a positive guy. You hear him Monday mornings, VSiN by the books. It is Dave Ross. Dave, the Major League Baseball season is over. How are you doing, man?
What a great question. How am I doing? I'm doing well, okay? It was a ton of fun rooting for that thing to try to get across the line. I just can't believe it didn't get across the line. You and I are a little bit older. We can go back and look at other World Series. It might be the greatest World Series. It'll never be number one for me because 86 for the Mets, the way they beat the Red Sox, that will forever be number one. This was close. Was right there with it. But if I had no dog or ticket in the race, and you were just watching that from a sports bliss perspective, I don't know that sport in general, any sport, gets any better than what we saw in that 7-game series.
Very rarely during the sporting event, and I didn't have a ton of skin in the game. I gave out the Yamamoto 20-1 after Game 4. I mean, I gave out other guys MVP too, so I don't want to sit here and victory lap too much. Very rarely in a sporting event do I sit there and just laugh. When Rojas hit the home run, I feel bad saying it to you. I'm laughing just in disbelief. Like, oh my God, he just did that to one out in Game 7 of the World Series. Then the plays in the bottom of the that ninth inning is one of the great innings in World Series history with the Rojas homer, the Rojas play in the field where he's kind of stumbling and kind of flipping, did a terrible job. I'm sure you saw the secondary lead. Probably cost him the World Series. And then the two guys that had disaster written all over it. One of them, they're going to run into each other. The ball's going to drop, and the Blues are going to win the World Series. And the center fielder, I think it was Páez, basically does a Randy Moss and jumps over him, catches the ball, and hangs on. I mean, it's just ridiculous, the drama, the excitement of that game and that inning.
Yeah, it was Kelly Leak for some of us of an age of Bad News Bears. Like, he's going to catch everything. And by the way, credit to Dave Roberts. Dave Roberts put Páez in the ninth inning. During the ninth inning is when he made the defensive substitution, and then Páez goes and makes a play like that. When that happened, I just went, it's not going to happen. Like, I told myself at that point, there's too many things that should have happened. This game should have been over many, many different times. But it wasn't. And look, the way I look at it, like, the Blue Jays had 10 different ways they could have won the game, right? If IKF has a half-step larger lead, secondary lead off of third base, if, you know, again, the fly ball that doesn't go down, if they get the run in the eighth inning, Clement leads off with the double, and what goes unnoticed is Jimenez doesn't get the bunt down on the first strike, and then they take the bunt off, and he slaps one to Muncy, who makes an unbelievable play. It's an Adam ball, but he's already drawn in for the bunt, so it's right on him. That ball's hit an inch the other way. It's the extra run that you need. And the Muncy, you know, those little plays that happened there, Muncy hitting the home run, when your Savage looked like he was back locked in after the great double play by Vlad. There are a million points of this game that Toronto could have won it and maybe won for the Dodgers, and all it takes is one. And that's why, look, at the end of the day, you got to tip your cap to L.A., and it's the oldest cliche, you know, in boxing or MMA or whatever, you know, to be the man, you got to beat the man that Ric Flair once said back in the day. And they are the man. And the Blue Jays took their best shot, and it still wasn't good enough. And when that happens, you got to go, man, that team just dug in. And when Muncy hit that home run in the eighth, I went, uh-oh. And now I was thinking, I'll say this too, before the home run that happened. I said, you cannot, out loud to myself, you can't walk him. If he hits a home run, so be it. Next pitch, home run. And I was like, oh, I shouldn't have said it, put that into existence. Because you're thinking Shohei. You can't put him on, and Shohei, it's a two-run shot, and you lose. No, no, no. It's the batter before Shohei. It's the nine-hole hitter. It's the substitution that Dave Roberts made after game five. Roberts gets hammered a lot. He made all the necessary adjustments, including pitching all four of his starters in game seven. I don't think you'll ever see that again in the history of Major League Baseball in one game.
Incredible. And especially for a team with a bazillion dollar payroll where you've got to resort to, all right, all of our starters are in. I don't care if you pitched last night, two nights ago, you're all in. I will say, he did push a lot of the right buttons. I thought he left Ohtani a little bit too long. You could tell pretty early he didn't have it. He wasn't sharp. I thought that three-run homer, man, I would have pulled him before. I mean, it's easy to say after the fact, but I thought even at the time that, boy, you're rolling the dice with him. And I thought the same thing with the Blue Jays with Scherzer. I didn't think either starter was sharp or really had it.
No, they weren't. Scherzer got through some guts and guile to get you as much as he could get you. I will say this, too. Schneider did – I thought he did an excellent job. Though, again, you can always go back when it goes wrong and say, what if? But, because Bichette couldn't run, cost them a run early. Of course, he hits the three-run tank, so they're up 3-0. It's hard to – he's got to be in the lineup. But Springer, too, at the top of the lineup. You can see as the game went on, he hit some really bad ABs in key spots because he can't run, he can't swing, right? So everything's guts and guile. The Blue Jays were banged up just enough that it kept the door open for the Dodgers. I will say this. If Bichette is healthy – didn't even play in the first two rounds of the playoffs, just the World Series. Probably shouldn't have played in the World Series. If Springer doesn't get hurt in the Seattle series, Dodgers don't win. But those type of things, those little injury bugs that kept them a little bit undermanned, Dodgers are full strength. Blue Jays are probably 85%. It was almost good enough. But that was as evenly matched a series. And that's why I thought it'd be a deep series. I didn't think we'd get that kind of drama in a Game 7, Will. But, man, I think the Blue Jays, as this year goes on, the offseason, it's going to be tougher and tougher as it goes. Because there's so many what-ifs, one little thing here, one little thing there, they win. And the Dodgers maximized everything they could get out of their starters, maximized everything late, and figured out a way to get it done. Kudos to them.
Plus, they're the Blue Jays. If the Dodgers had lost the game, oh, man, it's tough. Could have won, should have won. You play all the things over. But you're the Dodgers. You'll probably be back next year, the year after. You'd be right in the mix, at least you think. The Blue Jays, I mean, who knows? You look at that division, they were projected, they had the lowest over-under win total in the division. They were last. I mean, there's no lock to even make the playoffs next year. I can't think of a more painful, excruciating loss for any team ever, all things considered. The Rangers in 2011, when they were, I think, a strike away 18 different times, was bad. Obviously, the Red Sox, I mean, you could go through some that are painful, but when you just think of the psychology of it, where, boy, you get there, and I say this all the time with these sports, but especially in baseball, the season starts, you get to spring training, Valentine's Day. You get 6 weeks of practice and spring training, and then 162-game regular season just to make the playoffs, then four rounds of playoffs. Getting back is just so ridiculously hard, and to be that close and just give it away, man, I just can't even imagine. It's just an awful, awful loss.
I don't think it'll ever get worse than the 86 Red Sox. They are up two runs with two outs, nobody on base, and two strikes.
Good point.
I mean, they are one strike away with nobody on, and it wasn't a walk and a homer. It was 1,000 cuts with a base hit and a pass ball and an error, of course, by Buckner. Like, all of those things had to happen in order for the Mets to make that miraculous two-run comeback in the bottom half. That one, to me, will still be the all-timer. This one, there were little signs. Like, again, they didn't get the run in on the bottom of the eighth with a leadoff double by Clement. Like, that was big, right? Bassett was lights out. Hadn't given up a run, and he gives up a run early on. Savage was lights out. He gives up the blast to Muncy. So, like, those guys had been perfect, and that gets to Hoffman instead of a two-run lead or a three-run lead. It's just a one-run lead, and he got beat. I mean, he just got beat by a 3-2 hanger, and you just don't expect Rojas to be able to go do that, and he did it. And I think it's stunning when you know Ohtani's on deck. But I understand it, man. In hindsight, forget about the World Series. It's the nine-hitter who can't hit, and you give him a cookie, and he takes it out over losing to Ohtani. Like, you know, when Sir Anthony Dominguez did that to Shohei back in, what, game three? It was a meatball. You go, that's the worst pitch in the history of the World Series. Agreed. Hoffman, you can make a bad pitch. You don't think it's going to hurt you for a home run. So I can, in hindsight, that one will be easier to take. But it's still, you still go, I cannot believe the nine-hole hitter beat me in front of Ohtani.
We'll get to football here in a second. But last thing in terms of, like, just you personally, hedging, you know, people giving you advice. And I can't stand, I read through, you know, your tweet and some of the comments, all the geniuses who,
oh my God,
should have done this way, should have done that way. I mean, that stuff is, you did hedge, you did monetize the ticket.
Yep.
What did you learn, if anything, and just like sort of hedging tickets? Did you view anything differently going forward? And would you have done anything differently?
Well, you know me, and I did not want to hedge, and I did not hedge before game one. And we talked about this. I waited. Now the Blue Jays came back to win game one. Remember, they were losing. It could have backfired if they lose game one. They were -250 at the beginning of the series. That was the risk that I took. And when I should have, hindsight, hedged after game one, was about -$1.25 in the Dodgers at that point. That would have been the better hedge. But I thought they were going to win game two. I thought Gosman was going to win game two. Of course, now we know Yamamoto would turn out to be the MVP of the series with three wins, and he was lights out. But had they won game two, I was going to come back and hedge in the Dodgers. That probably would have been close to 2-1 betting underdog at that point, and had a really nice price point. I hedged there at -250 for a sizable chunk to make sure that I got at least 10K at that point. And that's what I did with that. Now, I ended up getting it up to about 15, 17, had it to 20, gave a little bit back with some other plays before game seven that weren't necessarily hedges, was looking for some middles and some props that I would not have played before game six. Had a really bad one on Yamamoto, over 18.5. That's six innings and one out. And they pulled him after six, which I couldn't believe. And he only had 96 pitches. And yet, how would we ever know that he'd come into play in game seven? So I thought they'd empty the tank with Yamamoto there. And I was really stunned. And that was a big leverage play for me. I was looking for that sweet middle of Yamamoto does his part, but yet the Blue Jays still have a chance to win. That didn't come. So look, I took some shots, man. And I'm very happy that I took shots to really monetize the ticket. I did. I mean, if you told me that I had a free roll on a 22-1 on the Blue Jays at the All-Star break and still walk out with 17K, I'll take it. Not exactly where I'd wanted to be, because I was going to be leveraging over 40 had Toronto won. And I thought, I allowed myself at one point to believe it's going to happen. And then the ninth inning, when all the things that transpired in the ninth and the bottom of the ninth, I went, okay, be happy with what you have. Like you always said, and this should have been more podcasts, right? I probably bet what I wanted to bet. I took the shots I wanted to take. I really wanted that ticket to be over 40K because I felt like they had kind of earned it. But at the end of the day, didn't get there. And I have to tip my cap to the Dodgers. It's a remarkable comeback, which you just don't see in sports. 28-3 comes to mind there. To be able to do what they did, to burn me and burn the Blue Jays, you know, at some point you got to go to the other side, just wasn't going to give in, and they didn't.
Did you see their number for next year, Blue Jays?
Oh, I got to think it's probably 15-1, somewhere in there.
You're not far off, 20-1. Dodgers short shot +370, no surprise. Yankees +750. I don't know. The Yankees just continue to get this respect because they're the Yankees. I don't totally get it. Phillies 11-1, Astros and Mariners 13-1, and the New York Mets 15-1. Red Sox at 16-1. If you have a hint on where you think Scooble might go, if you think he's getting traded tonight, we had Jensen Lewis on Friday. He thinks he's getting traded.
Yeah.
If the Red Sox ever got Scooble, which I don't know if that's the direction they go. I mean, that's a good bet, but obviously that's not, you know, guaranteed. I don't know. Any of those numbers jump out to you?
I mean, with the Yankees pitching at +750,
okay.
Sure. Okay, let's see what they do to get some help around All Rise.
Sure. You know, Jock Peterson, come on down. I mean, they're not going to do anything. They'll maybe bring Bellinger back. They're going to do what they always do. They'll do just enough to be like, okay, they'll be decent, and then
you know who I really do, who I'm going to be looking at. There's two teams you know I'm going to be looking at, and I bet them this year 1-1. But the bigger play, I had a 5-unit play in the Reds over 78.5, and that was my favorite bet of the year. The only over that I lost. I hit all my other futures. Well, I'm not a massive. I'm going to play one or two and kind of hammer those home. I had the Royals 82.5, and they got one short, came up one short there. I'm going to watch the Royals. I think their offense is going to be better next year with a year of experience for those young kids with the wits and the Jack Cags of the world. I like their pitching. If they make one more move offensively, they could be a Blue Jays-esque team next year. That might be a team I'm going to look. If their win total is right around 81, 82 again, I'll probably be backing that over, and I will be looking at the Reds. I like their youth. I like their pitching. I think the division, the Brewers at some point have to come back. I'm not sold on the Cubs. I think it's a winnable division for the Reds. If they're around 80, 81 again, I'll be looking to play them as well.
All right, football. I sat here last week and went, man, I can't remember a worse day of games. All the games kind of stunk, a bunch of blowouts. NFL, that doesn't last for long. The games are awesome on Sunday. Just crazy game after crazy game. We'll start with the Bills. Kind of a little off the radar. They had those two losses. They hadn't been impressive the last month. They reintroduced themselves. And look, they're no lock to win the division, but that was an impressive performance. Do you change how you feel about the Bills, and are they back to being a Super Bowl favorite? Where are you at here with the Bills beating the Chiefs?
I'll be transparent. I did not have my best week. I really like Detroit this week. But my favorite play on the board was the Bills over the Chiefs today. And that felt like it was, I don't want to say relative ease. It's never ease when the Chiefs had the ball down 7 and Mahomes got it in the fourth quarter. You're kind of like, oh, here comes the drive. Joey Bosa really got after him late. Like you start to see certain players that you pick up, they feel like closers, right? They feel like Mariano Rivera's of the past, that I'm not going to see him for 2.5 quarters of this game, but when I need them, they've got that guy, right? Now, they did take some defensive injuries late in that game too. So I'm going to be a little bit leery about that Bills defense, but you watch what the Bills do now. They're a power football team. None of their receivers scare you. Even Shakir is really good. Scat, you know, Coleman's a big body. He's not, has no speed. It's physical. And they physically beat Spags up front today with James Cook, and Allen used his legs a little bit more in spots where they needed to. And they used the tight ends. They used both tight ends today. It was Kincaid. It was Knox. Those are the guys that are making the differences on the outside. So that's all power football to me. And by the way, that's not always the way you look at the Buffalo Bills. If they can play like that, Will, and this is my inner Lombardi coming out, if they can play that style, they used to play spread you out and try to beat you deep and all that, Stephon Diggs back then. That doesn't play in January in wind in Orchard Park. You know what does? Running the football. You know what does? Physicality. I like their makeup because they're much more physical offensively than that bet. Now I'm going to be worried about the defense with the injuries. Can they hold up? If they do, yeah, well, they're going to be the exact team everybody thought they were going to be at the beginning of the year.
And here's the thing, though, and I'm looking, division odds are not up right now for that division for some reason. They're no lock to win the division. I mean, the Patriots are now at 7-2, and the Patriots have a win in Orchard Park. So if the Patriots can just win at home against Buffalo, they're going to have a tiebreaker that knocks them down another. So that might be as impressive as this is for Buffalo. And Buffalo is still minus 175 at FanDuel, as I checked, to win the division. Patriots are plus 140. Any of those numbers attractive to you?
I'd play the Bills. I'd lay the $1.75 right now. Look, the other play that I had that I gave out was Falcons. I had the Falcons today +5.5. Should have won to me, they should have won the game outright. You miss an extra point late. It's just a killer, right? But, you know, they easily cover the number. Point is, I think we're getting a little bit over our skis a little bit on the Pats. They're good. And Vrabel's physical. And, you know, you knew the coaching upgrade they got from Gerard Mayo a year ago was going to show instantly. And it did. I mean, it really has. People that say coaching doesn't matter in this league, you know, Raheem Morris figures out ways to lose. I like Raheem. I think their team is better, but they figure out ways to lose games. And that's not the case with a guy like Vrabel. So I still like, if you're giving me the Bills less than $2, think about where that price point was this summer. I think there's value in that. I still think the Patriots will have one loss that you go, how'd they lose that one? I don't know that the Bills will have any giveaways going forward. So this was the big one for the Bills to get. After beating the Chiefs, you're still under $2. I actually think that's a fair price to lay.
Level of concern with the Packers and the Lions both losing. Is this just, hey, it's a long season, football happens, or is this, you know, a little bit of a red flag? Packers now 5-2-1, and the Lions with a surprising loss. McCarthy played pretty well here for Minnesota.
Packers are fugazi offensively. Defensively, they're legit. Offensively, I haven't trusted them at all. If it wasn't the Cowboys and putting up 40 in a tie, I mean, you don't see that. And last week against the Steelers, they looked really good in the second half. You know, Carolina beat the Cowboys, too. Now, Carolina goes into Green Bay and gets a win with Bryce Young and Dave Canales getting that done in a running game, right? So I'm not sold on the Packers running game. I'm really disappointed in the Lions because I've got tickets in the Lions at over 3-1 to win the division after week 1 when they lost to Green Bay. And I thought that was kind of the throwaway game. Look, now you got to beat Green Bay when you get them at home. But what you've done with the Bears win and with the Vikings win, you've kind of given the underbelly of the division hope that are we headed for a four-horse race in that division? I still think it's the Packers and the Lions, but those two teams did the other's favors today. I'm really surprised by the Lions coming off the bye that they could not stop J.J. McCarthy. Credit to the kid. Ankle looked just fine. So I don't know if it was that was the real reason why he was out, but he was running around there pretty darn good today from what I saw. So you got to tip your cap to KOC and J.J. And the other J.J. too getting that done today. But really disappointed in the Lions. I thought they could have taken a stranglehold on the division and essentially eliminated Minnesota, and they didn't do that today.
Any other takeaway before we get to the Monday night game? Any direction you want to go?
You know, again, I'm not as sold on the Bears. You know, like you go to Cincinnati, it's not going to be awe-inspiring, but you figure out a way when you fell behind late. And they did that in Vegas, too, not that long ago. Ugly games, teams they should be way better than. They're learning how to win with Ben Johnson. And it might sound cliche-ish. It's the hardest thing to do for first-year head coaches. And essentially, I know it's a second-year quarterback, but with Ben Johnson, he's essentially a rookie starting all over again. They're building something there. I don't think they're ready yet, but they're building something there in Chicago. Their defense is not very good, that's for sure. But they're figuring out the ways to win games that last year they clearly would have lost.
Monday night, the Cowboys are now laying 3.5, the total 53.5. I like the over. I mean, you just look at these Cowboy games. I know it's simple, but just 66 points, 68. You just, I mean, it's hard to make the total high enough. I know it's Brissett going for Arizona, looks like. But over for me. Elite offense, terrible defense. What are you looking at?
Wolfpack. Don't turn your back on the Wolfpack. Jacoby Brissett. No, I'm playing the Cowboys. I laid the 3 before it went to 3.5. Kyler Murray was playing. I wouldn't have played it. I absolutely would not have played the game because Kyler Murray has never lost in Jerry World. I think he's undefeated in the state of Texas. So the second I saw that, I went, ooh, okay. Jacoby Brissett will be able to score. Anybody, like my point is, the Packers' offense I don't think is very good at all. It's very disjointed. And they put up an easy 40 on the Cowboys, right? Brissett's going to score. The over is the better play out of the side. But if you made me play the side, Cowboys are so much better at home. You saw what they did to the Commanders a couple weeks ago. I would be stunned if the Cowboys lost this game or didn't cover this game. I think eventually it's a two-score win for Dallas here. But that's a game where I'm counting on the Cowboys. I say book them for 30 every week. It's the best offense in the league, in my estimation. And the Cardinal defense was supposed to be their strength. It has not been. And I don't see a whole lot of resistance there for the Cowboys unless they get in their own way, which I don't think they will. It's not a big takeaway defense here from the Cardinals. Not a lot of ball hawks there defensively. I think the Cowboys put up at least 30, maybe even in the 40s. Good luck keeping up if you're Arizona. High-scoring game. Cowboys, I do like the over as well.
Dave, appreciate you coming on, man. I know it's a tough day, but you're a positive guy. I'm sure in a couple days, I mean, these things do wear off. I've plenty of bad beats of my own. They sting the next day. A couple days, it's just kind of wane away. This is the worst one you've ever had, though, right? I'm assuming.
Yeah, this is as bad as gets. I mean, this is a you know, 30 dime swing potentially one way or the other. So you know, that's a rough one. But again, I still look at it and I said, if you told me without the circumstances that I'm going to walk away with almost 20 dimes for a $3,000 free roll, right? You would take that every day and twice on Sunday. So I have to think of that. You've taught me on the Should Have Bet More podcast, you got to enjoy the wins. It stings. It stings. It absolutely stings. But I'm going to be very happy at the end of the day when everything settles in the bank account this week and you go, boy, I have a lot more money in there than I did. And what a ride it was. I just wish – it's not so – yes, of course, I wanted the monetary reward for it. But you really do get invested in them, and you go, man, what a story. Man, what a team. And I'm with you, Will. Those things normally don't come around again. So it felt like an all-time situation to capitalize on, and I wasn't able to do it, and they weren't able to do it. It's going to sting much more for them in the long term. Money's money, but you can't get that World Series back, right? Like, you can't – those things do not necessarily – in that team, they all talked about how much they loved each other in that locker room and in that clubhouse. And that's going to be the disappointment because it'll never be the same. It will not be the same. Next year's team will not be a last year's team. You could try to run it back, but that magic in a bottle, man, it ran out in the most untimely of fashions in that ninth inning. And that's going to be one that as long as they live, like Red Sox fans and players from 86, they'll never quite get over it.
How would this have been for you if the Blue Jays had played the Mets in the World Series?
Oh, my God. There would have been hedging galore because I would have, you know, I'd be coming back on my Mets. And that's the funny thing about the ticket for those that don't know the origin stories. I was going to take the Mets because you know me, I wanted to free roll on my Mets. They're about 11-1. We're in first place. It's the All-Star break, right? We're right there with the Phillies, or, you know, somewhere right there in that vicinity. We're certainly not going to miss the playoffs. And I wanted that ticket. Mets went 7th. I was drafting 9th out of 12. And then the guy that was drafting 8, this guy David Chia, very nice guy that I got to meet over the course of the 3 days of the blackjack tournament, Will. He had asked me the day before, not knowing where we'd be positioned, who we were going to take, because he knows what I do for a living. And I said, David, I like you. I'm not lying to you. I'm not playing poker. I'm not a poker player. I would take Seattle at 30-1. That's, to me, it's the best value on the board. He ended up getting the 8th pick with a $4,000 free roll. Guess who he took? He looked at me right before he made the pick. And I said, if you don't take him, I am. And I was serious. He took Seattle at 30-1.
Wow.
The Phillies were still on the board at 11-1. The Red Sox were on the board at 35-1. Padres and Giants were on the board. And I said, you know what? I got to take the Blue Jays at 22-1. Three-game lead over the Yankees at that point. Red Sox were coming on strong at the break, if you remember. And I said, I just like their moxie. I think they're going to make a trade to get a frontline starter. That turned out to be Shane Bieber. Could not have forecasted Trey Savage. But if you Savage doesn't happen, that ticket's never live to begin with.
And how about if you had Seattle at 30-1?
Oh, my God.
They should have been in the World Series. They had Toronto.
$120,000 for a $4,000 free roll.
Unbelievable. Absolutely unbelievable. Dave, you're the best man. I'll be on with you Monday morning, so I'll see you then. VSiN by the books. Where else can we find you?
At D-Ross Sports, we always try to keep it upbeat. And, yes, we're going to tell you our bad beats. We're going to tell you our good wins. Hey, I had a nice little win today on the over in the Raiders and Jaguars game 44. It was 6-3 at halftime. 67-yard field goal. We had an NFL record field goal. And then all of a sudden that thing ended up in the 60s. Go figure. That's sports.
Unbelievable. 68, I think, too. And it's funny. I was watching the game, 60-yard field goal. I didn't even blink. You go, oh, yeah, it's a record. It's become routine with us stuff. Dave, you're the best, man. Thanks.
Appreciate you, Will.
All right, that'll do it. Rate, review, subscribe. Thank you to Dave Ross. We'll be back Wednesday. Enjoy the games, college basketball. By the time you listen to this, college basketball will be underway. 8 a.m. Winthrop game on this Monday here. I don't get why we're playing an 8 a.m. Monday game, but hey, put these games on all the time, all day, all night. People will watch them. Queens Lane 4.5. Winthrop Lane 4.5 against Queens. Queens are old buddies who gave out 50-1 to win the conference last year, and they were up 10 in the semifinals and couldn't get it home. Not that I'm still bitter, but Winthrop Lane 4.5, total 164.5 for anyone watching a little 8 a.m. hoops. And then you got games on all day. Bradley and St. Bonnie, Omaha and Murray State. Should be fun. Should be a lot of fun. See you Wednesday.